Hey, everybody. Thank you for checking out the show. My name is Kevin Sullivan. This is the Wait, What If podcast. Tonight, Riley Anderson returns. He was on last year, and we had a great discussion about ayahuasca, what ayahuasca is, what it isn't. It's kind of a touchy subject because, you know, this is an illegal drug. It's something that, you know, if you're caught with it, will wind you up in jail. So, you know, everything we're talking about is something that Riley did. I don't encourage anyone to do it. This is something that just has some really neat aspects to it. There's these weird connections that people have when they take the drug with each other. There's like similar experiences. People usually have profound changes in their lives. It's really, really an interesting thing. And so this episode is really just to kind of talk about it because it is, you know, you can't ignore it. It's there. Ayahuasca is there. Ibogaine is there. There's a lot of things. I'm trying to think of others. These natural drugs, really, they come from plants. And, you know, it's not something synthetic that was mixed up in like a Chinese lab and then sold on the streets and people are taking it at raves or anything. These are just plants that people discovered that if you take them, you know, you have profound experiences, which often change people's lives forever. You might notice that it's kind of noisy right now because I'm actually having my first episode out on the back porch. Down here in North Carolina, it is basically summertime, so I'm out here listening to the sound. Well, I was going to say to the sounds of the crickets, but that's actually a helicopter that just flew over. So a little bit of a disconnect from nature, but once that goes by, you'll hear the birds and all that cool stuff. So without further ado, here is the episode of Wait, What If Podcast with Riley Anderson.
You're listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
I'm about to blow stuff up.
That was a story that was also true. There was a lot truer than the truth that I put down.
I saw what would look like these little dudes from like Monsters, Inc. movie, and they were kind of like knocking on my brain, opening it up a little bit, like peeking in, knocking on my brain, peeking in. Knocking on my brain, peeking in.
Be prepared to expand your mind and question your reality.
We're about to blow stuff up.
As always, your host, Kevin Sullivan.
Let's just hop right into it, man. With me tonight is Riley Anderson. He was on the show last year. I can't remember, Riley, was it like winter, fall? I don't remember. I don't think we're out on the back porch.
It was right around this time. I think it was in March.
Okay. So just a year ago. And Riley came on to discuss, we were talking about ayahuasca, and I think that's pretty much all we discussed at the time. I don't remember what episode it was number-wise, but if you go to waitwhatif.com and look under episode archive, and actually, you know what? It was such a good conversation. I might put it on the front page. I have a section now on the front page called Spotlight. So I'll put it under the Spotlight. So if you're listening to this, what I would do is listen to his first episode, get a good idea of, you know, his background and what we talked about then, and then you can hop on and this will be part two. It'd be like traveling through time. It'd be like hearing everything that happened then, and then boom, suddenly you're a year later. All right. So what I was saying before I got everything all kind of messed up here was, do you want to give us a quick bio, quick rundown?
Sure thing. So, my story is that after university, I found myself in actually a pretty good spot. I was where I wanted to be financially. I had a good social circle. I had a really good friends and family that I could rely on that supported me. But something was still missing. And, you know, it took a while to really get to the root of it. And I'm not, like, I tried going through social workers and doing some work with other types of professionals, some psychologists, and it certainly helped to get me a little bit more out of my mind, a little bit.
Isn't that a little bizarre? Because I went through a similar thing. Sorry to interrupt, but
yeah, sure.
that as creatures on this planet, which we're primates, we're basically monkeys, right? We can't figure out our purpose. A lot of us have trouble discovering what it is. Like, if you go into South America, the gorillas are pretty happy doing whatever they do, right? The spider monkeys are perfectly happy, but we don't know what the purpose is for, you know, us on this earth, and we have to discover it. I think that's very unique to being a human.
It is, and it could stem because we are such incredible apes and monkeys. We know our potential. We can see the things that, let's say, our colleagues and our counterparts are doing, or things that we see in the news about what we're doing with science, technology, medicine, and we can see our capacity that we have in this incredible brain of ours. And so I think that it maybe stems from we know how far we can go with this, and if we're not doing something incredible or we feel like we're not reaching our potential, then I think it can be grating on us.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I don't think there's like a gorilla who's hanging around watching another gorilla pick bugs off, I don't know, his friend, and like, you know what, I could probably do that better. I'm bored with my life right now. And for the listeners too, you might hear all this noise in the background, which is kind of cool. This is a perfect setting because what we're going to talk about today is a little more about the psychedelics and the human body. And I don't know, we usually go on a tangent and talk about a bunch of other random stuff, but I'm actually out in my backyard. This is the first episode this year, this season, where I'm outside again because the summer is here in the South, and it's really nice. So, you had met with some social workers and stuff, and then I interrupted, so you can go from there.
It had helped a little bit getting me out of my mind. I was kind of stuck in these thought patterns that you could call ants, automatic negative thinking. Mm-hmm. And so you can go through some techniques like cognitive behavioral therapy. You can try to work on things, and it did help for sure, but I was given the opportunity to go much deeper, much harder into my mind and into my spirit, for lack of a better term, than I ever thought was possible. And that was with the assistance of a psychedelic group called ayahuasca. And I did a 3-night endeavor, and then I went back 6 months later and did another one. And it wasn't until that second trip that the real changes started happening in my life, and the message started coming through.
Did a need for change within yourself precede the ayahuasca, or were you just doing what you were doing and said, hey, you know, I'm not sure what I want to do in life? Did you search out the answer through ayahuasca, or did you just happen to have an opportunity to take part in a ceremony, and then everything happened after that?
I would say that it came and found me, and that just certain coincidences all came and converged together to allow this experience to happen. It just so, you know, it's being in the right place at the right time. So happened to know somebody that was running these ceremonies in a very careful, very controlled, but also very secretive way, as you have to. And they were kind enough. I think they could see that I was going through some struggles, and we'd had a lot of talks before the concept of ayahuasca ever came up. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until after these people, I think, knew that I would be ripe for it, that started coming into the conversation.
And then after you had your experience there, then where did that point you?
Quit my job. Woo! Got out of Dodge. Yeah, my job was good. It was an analyst position at an oil and gas company. We had a lot of perks, full benefits, options, everything you could want, catered breakfasts. But what I needed to do was I realized that I was largely making money for the company, making money for myself. I didn't feel like I was contributing that much to my fellow man, to my community. And I probably still could have made some changes in the city that I was at, and even in the job I was at. It doesn't mean you have to quit your job or anything like that. You can still find avenues to make more of a difference. But the messages for me were to really make a big leap across the country, leave my safety net, and go back to school and pursue another degree, which I'm in the middle of right now. And very happy.
Excellent. So so you found your purpose in life. It guided you into the right, direction.
That was one of the things. Beyond that, it was really about all the things that are woo, you know, like feeling connected with everything. So that was a part of it. But the other part was feeling connected with everything from the inception of the Big Bang. You know, it was like, and those feelings seem to hit you on a very deep level. Like, we can intellectualize right now, you and I, that we realize that we're just this outward flow from the Big Bang, which was maybe, I don't know, 14.5 billion years ago or something like that. And we can say, oh yeah, we can see the progression on how planets formed and galaxies, and we're made up of the same elements that are formed in stars, and you kind of go, yeah, that's kind of cool. But when you're under the influence, and when you're in ceremony, it goes from beyond intellectualizing something so profound, and it just starts to hit you like a freight train. So that was another part of it. And I know that in research that they've conducted, they found that it can be actually beneficial in our real life as far as certain cognitive conditions goes, especially depression, because it can get people out of their negative thinking. It can get them to, let's say they have a severe anxiety of their own mortality, it can get them out of that. There's real world benefits that come with it.
Right.
And yeah, and it's totally illegal.
And, yeah, I know, which is another strange thing we'll get into. But it seems to me like, you know, as humans, we get sort of caught up with everything around us, these social constructs, these things that these stresses that we place on ourselves that really have no tangible basis. And ayahuasca kind of lifts the veil, says, hey, stupid, stop being so spun up over things that you really have no control over. This is what it's all about. This is, behind the curtain. This is what's going on. And then it allows you to then come back to this world that we live in and operate cleaner or in a more knowledgeable way. Is that a good way of describing it?
That was very well put. I'm surprised you haven't sat in ceremony yourself. That was well done, yeah.
I know, I haven't. And I used to be terrified when I first read about it and even heard some of your stories. It seems like a terrifying experience. But the more I read about it, and I guess the older and wiser I get, it's not something, it's actually pulling me closer to it. It's not saying, hey, you know, this isn't a good idea, maybe don't go near that stuff. It's like, you know, I kind of want to look behind the curtain. I kind of want to see, I want to experience what people are experiencing.
Yeah. And see if, with the knowledge that you have of it, right now, it seems like you've done some research, you've read books on it. It would be really interesting to see if you would visit those same rooms or realms. I say rooms because it's almost like you open door number one, and there's certain people will see this, and lots of people will see what's behind door one. And then you can open door number two, and lots of people see what's also, but there's only several doors. Like, it's not necessarily, as far as overarching themes goes, mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be completely individualized and completely separate. It seems to be this shared experience amongst human beings. And then we start to get into some really interesting questions, like the first humans that were anatomically similar to us in structure and in brain structure, were they seeing the same things that I saw? And from the evidence that we can see, whether it's cave art from 40,000 years ago or whether it's studies conducted in the 60s, 70s, and even today, there's still some doctors getting away with it. There's just these striking similarities that's what freaks me out the most about being part of this, is reading other people's stories about, let's say, the strange world of DMT. It's this fractal, mechanical, shiny, metallic circus with clowns. And when I read people's anecdotes about what they went through, it really freaks me out, because it brings me back there, and I can feel it, I can sense it, I can see it again, and I go, why did I see clowns? I'm not one of those people that feels a certain way towards clowns one way or the other. I really could care less. They don't freak me out. I don't, you know, they're kind of interesting sometimes, but the fact that it's either they're called clowns or they're called jesters or they're called something else. You know, you start to see these patterns.
Yeah, that's what Joe Rogan said when he did some DMT. He saw a bunch of jokers floating around giving him the middle finger.
Yeah.
And he saw that as them saying, oh, you think you know what you know, you think you have it all under control. You think you know what your life is all about. Screw you. we have you now, and we're going to show you really what it is. A lot of those things that you just brought up are, you can find in Graham Hancock's Supernatural. And I think one of the more fascinating aspects to that is some of these psychedelic experiences, you can remove a person out of a culture. You know, they're cross-cultural. So I can't go to bed right now, in theory. Maybe I could if there's actually... there's what we call endogenous DMT in our brains. But I couldn't go to bed right now and dream about drinking coffee in Argentina, because I've never been to Argentina. I don't know what the coffee's like there. I have nothing to compare it to, or there's nothing in my experience to pull from. Yet when people take DMT or in the ayahuasca ceremony, there's shared experiences beyond culture, and you're right, beyond time. And what that's another aspect to the Graham Hancock book, Supernatural, is that it starts off as him looking at these cave paintings and trying to figure out what it is they're trying to say. And the cave paintings aren't in areas where, like, it's, you know, it's not a big open gallery and you could stand as, 20,000 years ago and look at these cave paintings and observe them and say, oh, they were like in cramped little areas and they were in places that weren't easily accessible. So they were put there as some sort of documentation to share their experiences, but not in such an easily grabbed way. I just realized too, as we started talking, I want to also give a background of what we're talking about. So the truth to this is that we're talking about an illicit drug. We're talking about a illegal drug. I'm not telling anyone to go out and do this. If you're interested in it, I would say do your research and don't break the law or anything like that. But what it is, it's a chemical called DMT. And I always mess up the last part. I would say dimethyltryptophan. Is that right? Or is it tryptamine?
Tryptamine.
Okay, so it's dimethyltryptamine, and it's a chemical that is found in thousands of species of plants. It's found in living creatures like ourselves. It's in our brain, and it's very psychoactive. The strange thing about DMT is that it seems to have been around for thousands of years. There's cultures in South America that take part in shamanistic rituals where they use this medicine. The thing about it is, it's not like you could just go out and look at a tree and start chewing on its bark and then find yourself talking to God. What they had to do somehow thousands and thousands of years ago was find the right plant that carried DMT, which there were, you know, like I said, quite a few, but then find another plant, which was a vine that carried what we call an MAOI inhibitor, which is, so basically if you take ayahuasca, if you drink it, if you drink like a tea with it, the chemical in your stomach, DMT, or I think it's DMT, something like that, will get broken down by your enzymes or by enzymes and becomes inactive. So it won't do anything to you. But to have the MAOI, and it's monoamine di... Oh, wait, what is it? I should know because I'm a PA. Say that again.
Monoamine oxidase inhibitor.
That's right. That's right. So these people a long time ago knew that if you took that out of a vine and mixed it with the DMT, then it would render the enzymes in your stomach that basically break up these chemicals and make them useless. It actually makes them useful. And then people go off into the spirit realm. And it's yes, it's illegal. It's considered a drug. I wouldn't call it a narcotic because it's not, people aren't doing it to get high. People take this medicine, I would rather call it, but I guess, you know, we have to say illicit drug, not as a fun, enjoyable experience, but as a peer into their self-conscious, like as a view into their the origins of their consciousness and the origins of the world itself. So that's the basis of this conversation. There's other medicines too out there. There's lots of them that have these same properties, these same mental healing properties, this like self-healing properties. I mean, they have a lot of benefit to them, but they are just for whatever reason considered non-medicinal, like having no medical purpose, and they're put on why can't I think of the name of it? The drug enforcement agencies. Schedule. Yeah, they put on the schedule. So that's where we stand. And Riley is experienced in using it. And I always found that, you know, I just find it fascinating. It's a fascinating thing that these drugs are out there, that they're there for us to grab. We've figured out how to use them. And their experiences are just like the title of Graham Hancock's book. They're supernatural. There's something beyond the physical going on there, and the I guess evidence of this is just, I guess it's all anecdotal, but it's overwhelming, and it's a really neat thing. So yeah. Well, I guess that's it. See you later. One of my long rants there, but I mean that's really, I guess, the nature of the medicine.
Yeah, I think it's fair to call it a drug here and in North America. In somewhere like Brazil, it would be considered medicine. So I guess it just depends on what side of the border you're on and where you're at. I don't necessarily disagree with it being controlled. I think it would have to be something that people in our society, especially, that we're all about consumption and more no limits, and our human egos are run amok and things like that. I could see it turning into a problem if we just said everyone do this. But it has to be controlled, the same way that we control our prescription drugs, the same way that we control alcohol. I think that what makes it scary is going into yourself and going into your own mind. We're also in a culture of endless entertainment and sensory input, and especially now with our phones, we feel bored, we get on our phone, we feel lonely, we get on our phone and we get on our computer, and we don't really feel those maybe darker feelings. Right. We find ways to avoid it constantly, and when you take something like this, you come face to face with all that. And so if you're not ready and you don't know what you're getting into, it can be scary, because I talk about all the great things that it showed me and told me, but it also gives you some stern talking about the things that you're doing in your life that are hurting other people or hurting yourself. Whether that's, you know, something active you're doing or something passive, like you're just being a little bit too lazy and you know that you have more potential to give. So you hear through some of the research, especially with the psilocybin, that it's some people's, it's their most profound, some of their most profound and important moments in their whole life. It can really be that impactful. And it was definitely that way for me. Like you said earlier, neither of us are telling anyone to go do that. I never tell anyone to go do it. I never have. And I never will. I can guide people and give them the information they want. But it would be like any substance. So someone comes up to you and asks about any substance, you know, I would hesitate to tell them just to go and do it, especially if it's on a schedule.
Sure.
You know,
I thought a fascinating thing you just said was a stern talking to, and that's a common thing you hear, common theme with people who've experienced ayahuasca, is this parental figure, almost a godlike figure that holds us like a child and tells us the way it is. I'm a parent, and you know, I love my children to no end, but you know, to be a good parent, you also have to be the bad guy. You know, you have to be able to guide them and correct them when they're wrong. What is it, or where do you stand as far as what do you think the origin of these experiences are? Do you think it's a psychoactive drug that is activating the visual cortex and the audio cortex and the tactile areas of your brain? Or are you on the believer of, you know, maybe this is a way for us to talk to a creator, to meet God?
We can go both ways on that. The first way you talked about is as far as the brain. What we can see is, like you mentioned, the visual and the auditory cortex. So normally, like right now when you and I are talking, there's centers within our visual cortex, within the occipital lobe, that talk to each other. There's centers within the visual cortex that talk to each other, and they kind of stick to their own community. But when you're under the influence of a hallucinogen, there's some cross patterning. There's a pretty decent TED Talk. I think his name's Dr. Robin Harris, and he shows some of these scans, and so there is definitely like a physiological aspect to it, and then we can also see activity within our visual cortex amplifying, which is really cool too. So there is that side of it, and then there's this other side that gets really strange and exciting, I think, to talk about, is that perhaps it is something that it is accessing in our DNA, that it plays almost like an old 1930s reel, film reel. Mm-hmm. And so you see this, that's why you would see the same movie. I see the same movie. People 40,000 years ago in Peshmerga in France were seeing the same movie. Are we really tapping into some sort of a realm where we can actually learn some lessons? I think that's the most important part. We don't, especially with ayahuasca, you don't just go there and come back with nothing and, you know, say that, well, that was moderately interesting. Like, it's mind blowing. And there's an order, to these lessons and to this teacher student relationship. There seems to be this logical flow to teachings, which is so strange, because so if you were to go on like the film reel theory, you are taking away some of that personalization that can come, where you have to look inward into your own specific life. So that is part of it. I like to go all the way with it and just go panspermia. DNA came from bacteria, from probably a meteorite that hit Earth maybe 3.5 billion years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And because we already either had DNA or we already either had protein at that point in order for bacteria to replicate. Mm-hmm. So I think it came from somewhere, and you can take a scientific viewpoint, even though it's a bit of an alternative scientific viewpoint. You can still look at it rationally and think that that's at least a possibility.
Sure.
And then from there, things get really fun because then if it came from somewhere and we don't know where it came from, now you can just get all wild with your speculations, sure. Which is the most, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, because you can get into the idea, and there's a lot of people that say DMT and the ability for us to discover it and the ability of it to interact with our brain was programmed by someone. Someone had said, you know, let's leave this message for people whenever they develop somewhere, and they'll be able to actually look back. It's kind of a fascinating way to think of things, because how would you communicate with beings that may or may not exist, but you have to communicate with them, you know, thinking beyond language, being mm-hmm. beyond social signaling. It has to come from, I don't know. I mean, maybe it would have to come from something like DMT, where, you know, once this chemical is activated, then we can talk. Then we can, you know, the questions and the answers, or the questions can be answered.
You just reminded me of... when I enter into that realm, it's happened a couple times where we'll just keep using the same terms, entities, spirits, what have you, they were almost happy to see me, and they were almost like if you left your dog for 3 days on vacation, left it with your friend, and then you saw it again, like that happy, like we've been waiting for you, it's nice to see you, hello, there's so much to show you, kind of thing.
Yeah. That's really cool. Graham Hancock talks about that too.
Yeah.
He says, it's like, oh, we're so glad you found this technology. Now now we can talk.
It was one of the things I told a friend of mine the next day after my very first night. I said, you know, I don't know how to explain this to anybody. This is going to seem crazy. But whoever those things, those people, I just call them a race, whoever that race of spiritual aliens was, it was almost like we've been expecting you in a way, but we weren't sure if we'd see you, almost like a welcome back kind of thing. And there was some familiarity to it,
that's wild.
Yeah. And they and then the message at the end was like, now you know how to find us, and here's our calling card, our metaphoric calling card that is that molecule, DMT, or in a structurally similar form like psilocybin.
Wow.
So yeah, like you know how to find us now, and that's yeah.
And it makes sense, because let's say it wasn't discovered until a advanced society, maybe an advanced society said, oh, look at DMT. You need to be able to strip away all the stuff we've created for ourselves. As conscious beings, we create this entire world that really, it only feeds our egos, I think. There's no other way for it, you know? Our societies, our cultures, our countries, our jobs, are all these weird ego boosting things. And if you can strip that away, then you can get down to the core of it. And it seems like the perfect molecule to do that.
And why? It's so puzzling why this molecule would do those things.
I know.
Evolutionarily speaking, you know.
And then it doesn't seem to me like, and then let's go back to say, hey, you know what? This is just a, chemical, makes you, you know, see goofy things and that's it. But even if that's the case, it's still an experience, you know, it's still happening. There's still something you can take away from it, but it's
right.
It's a lot more sexy to think it was, you know, whenever we talk like this, I picture Prometheus. Did you ever see that movie?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I start thinking about.
Like about the beginning.
Yeah. Like I picture these like, I don't know, these creatures that, what was it? It was like a black sort of ink or something, if I remember. Yes. Yeah.
To the river.
Yeah. But it makes sense. Now, there's other chemicals too out there, and I wanted to touch upon, because I don't know, I know a lot about DMT just from research, but I know very little about ibogaine. Is there a connection to the two? Are they similar in structure, or or what's going on there?
That is a good question. I guess while we figure out the structure, we can talk about the prop. Like, from what I know, so it is. So iboguing is a little bit different. It's a bigger molecule. Like, it's got another ring on there. It's got maybe an extra carbon bridge or something like that. So let's say if DMT's somewhere in the 20s, like if it's 28 atoms, ibogaine's more like 60.
Okay.
So they're not exactly structurally similar enough, like say between serotonin and DMT or serotonin, DMT, and psilocybin. But the effects are... they are similar in the sense that you get to dissolve those boundaries of your physical self, of your ego. But it gets, from what I know of it, it gets a lot darker in experience. You have a lot more of a proclivity to speak to dead relatives, to really come face to face with your own mortality, and you go through a little bit of that with ayahuasca, but ibogaine seems to just be a lot more intense and a lot darker. I think brave people go and take we can say ibogaine or ibogaine or whatever.
Yeah,
but we'll just say ibogaine for simplicity's sake. Okay. I think those people are pretty brave, because that's a pretty dark place. I think that what they used it for is the people that drank it actually were supposed to go through a death, like go through a type of a death, and that's how you could come out the other side being reborn.
Is it more dangerous?
Right? And so you're spiritually...
I don't know if you heard me. Is it more dangerous or...
I know that, so in large amounts, as far as that one goes, it can have effects on your cardiovascular system. There can be some neurotoxicity in larger doses, but this is why these things, if it ever comes to the point where it becomes part of our society, they would have to be controlled. You know, anything can be dangerous. I think you and I talked about last time that there's a spectrum out there. You know, it's because not all drugs are just drugs. Drug A isn't as dangerous as drug B, and that also goes with things that are legal. So alcohol is safe in small quantities. We can all have a drink a day and it's not going to do anything. Could probably even have two drinks a day, it's not going to do anything. It might even actually help us. But I think it was you who said you go to the store and you grab a bottle of rye and you down that with a couple aspirin and you're dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So back to the question, like it can have some weird effects in the cardiovascular system. You can see some different waves on your ECG. Like, I think if you look at an ECG, the big waves is called a QRST wave.
And that's echocardiogram for electrocardiogram for listeners, that wiggly line printout that we look at to see what your heart's like.
That's right. So what ibogaine can do is it can cause what's called a long QT syndrome, which just means where you normally see just a very regular rise in the blip on your ECG on the Y axis. That can elongate and that can lead to future problems. But that's in high doses, and I mean, maybe if you're taking multiple doses one after the other.
Yeah.
But I think what we find with these substances is they're paradoxically, they're actually incredibly safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it
drives me nuts when people use, like, okay, so there have been reports of deaths, even with ayahuasca, and people say, see, it should be illegal. There's people dying. Yet you talk about the prolonged QT, which again is part of your heart's rhythm. You have an area where your heart is kind of resetting for the next beat. And if that during that time another beat jumps in, you can get into basically can stop your heart or make it beat ineffectively. But that, I could give someone, you've heard of a Z-Pack. I don't know if they have those up in Canada. You guys call them a Z-Pack.
No, probably.
So a Z-Pack is azithromycin. They treat them like candy down here. It's an antibiotic, and it's a powerful antibiotic. But it does the same exact thing. And I guarantee you it's killed people.
Yeah.
So you have to look at those things. When I'm talking to a patient about medicine, and it happens a lot, and there's something that I feel they should take, a lot of them will say, no, you know what? I read this side effect or that side effect. And then I want to be like, go read the side effects of aspirin. I'm sure you've taken plenty of aspirin. If you read it, without the knowledge that it's aspirin, you go, what is this poison? I'm not going to take that. I mean, it can erode your stomach, cause hemorrhaging through your GI system. And but I mean, you're right. Everything has that threshold, everything. Except maybe marijuana. I don't know. Does that kill people? I think that's,
I don't think it does. I don't think there's any deaths a year. I think it's zero.
Which is so strange. As a libertarian, it blows my mind.
Oh, nice. I like that. Small government.
That's right. So it blows my mind that I could sit there and write a script for an individual to basically go pick up heroin, go pick up opium. Which those are with the narcotics, the what they call the prototypical narcotics are basically heroin, and everything that we use is a derivative of that. And some of them are extremely strong. But I can write that for someone, no problem, no questions asked, no one will bat an eye. But if I write a prescription for marijuana, I'm going to jail. You know, it's or I don't have to write a prescription for anything. You can go pick up, like we said, a fifth of bourbon, and you drink that, you might die, especially if you're not used to drinking that much.
Yeah.
It's just the strangest thing.
It is. Yeah, it's like we have the privilege of information these days, and we can really trace it back to these things being highly politically charged. I think maybe starting in the 50s or starting in the 60s, was it McCarthy?
Communism. McCarthy was calling everyone communists, and people were like, no, I'm not a communist.
Did he happen to call people who smoked marijuana that were perhaps there south of the border also communists, and say it was, I don't know if it was him, but whenever it started, it was, you know, it did come down to money,
right?
These days we are starting to see some changes. I'm really surprised with the US and decriminalizing in some big states,
right.
You know,
right?
Colorado, California, is DC on that list too?
DC has a weird rule. It's like you can't sell it, but you can have it. And there's a weird rule. And Massachusetts is like that too. They're trying to figure it out.
So I'm glad to see the progress, but there's not a lot of logic being injected into this decision making.
There really isn't.
Your body knows what. They say that they're worried about the youth and things like that. And maybe there could be some side effects. Maybe it'll affect people so that they're not as productive, so that they're more tired. I mean, if you're using it throughout the day, I could see that. It can also help you sleep if you're an insomniac. That laziness can also, you know, maybe if somebody who has pain is taking it, now it's serving as an analgesic.
Mm-hmm.
It's about using things responsibly.
Right.
I think in Canada, coming up here pretty quick, within the next year, I think they want to do it by August of 2018. They're essentially legalizing it now in Canada. Yeah. So you have four plants and 30 grams. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, it's the weirdest thing what we've done to ourselves as humans, you know. We're free creatures, but we say that if there's a plant in the ground and if you pick that and are in possession of this thing that just grows, we'll put you in a cage. I mean, when you really break it down to what's going on, that's exactly what it is.
And there's got to be people in jail right now, even in some of those states. Uh-huh. that have legacy sentences. Is that true? They're still in there?
Yeah, because like these are federal crimes. You know, if someone is caught with enough marijuana or three strikes rule or anything like that, they can be put in jail for that or prison. And yeah, as long as it's still federally legal. Now, I guess if they strike it from the books in the state, I honestly don't know what they would do. So what we're talking about for listeners is if you have a conviction for let's say for possession of marijuana and you're in prison there and they legalize it, should you be free? I mean, in theory you did break the law, but I don't know. That's a strange thing, and those things are going to have to be discussed. But yeah. even yeah. You know, you can look at it too, even if you, so Sessions, I think it's Jeff Sessions, our attorney general, he said that no good people smoke marijuana. I mean, to make such a generalized statement is just wrong. It's just wrong because that's like saying no good people drink alcohol or no good people take aspirin. I mean, it's even if you don't, and this is the part that I can't figure out why not everybody is a libertarian. it's as human beings, we don't need a paternalistic figure to tell us what to do and what not to do. Mm-hmm. It should be your right to choose it. And then where people get a little upset or it gets a little iffy is when they say, well, what if your behavior infringes on my rights? Okay, now it's getting into a gray area. And, you know, if your rights are taken away because of someone else's behavior, then we have to do something about that. But,
sure.
But and then you can argue what rights are being taken away
right.
by you from someone who smokes marijuana or takes Ibogaine or takes ayahuasca. I don't know. I mean, if they're driving, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're driving and taking ayahuasca, I don't know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. You can't even put on your sweater, man. You can't even zip up your your zipper. That's not happening.
It's weird. We've as a species, we've just gotten into a weird area. And there's a lot of people out there that are saying, and I tend to believe it, that we're on the verge of an evolutionary shift. And it's going to happen much quicker than, you know, the classical evolution would happen. And that's the emergence of humans and machines. Not to say that that's not right. that's not natural. I mean, humans created these machines, so I mean, technically, it's natural, right? But it's right. I don't know where it's going to go.
I don't know either. Have you been following what some of the lead thinkers are saying about AI?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've had a couple experts on it on the show. One of them, a guy named
James. Nice.
Yeah, check out the episode with James Barrett. He's a he wrote a book called Our Final Invention, and it's pretty creepy. It'll scare the shit out of you, that's for sure. And then I had another interview with Callum Chase. And he was more along the lines of what is AI going to, the impact of it on society? You know, we're not going to be chopped up and used as fuel for machines, but when machines are running things, a lot of us aren't going to have a way to make ends meet. And so he was more on like the universal basic income side of things, but it's definitely, we can't stick our head in the sand with this. You know, there's a shift in human existence that's coming up, and it's not something that we can say, I'll let our great grandkids deal with it. It's coming soon. You know, we're talking yeah. years, not centuries. So it's kind of a weird thing, which made me, my ears perked up when you had said, bulletproof coffee. Because I think, and personally, this is why I'm doing it. I think it's good to hack your life in sustainable ways. So I think it's important to, how can I put this? I'm having trouble describe it. Get back to our roots as the primates that we are and start fueling our bodies and living the way that they physically are meant to be lived. And I just about 2 weeks ago, I just started the paleo diet because I don't know, I was just eating too much sugar and stuff, and sugar's wonderful, but I was like, you know what, this isn't good for me. And it's, I feel so much better. I feel fantastic.
That's congrats, man. That's tough to stay away from those carbs, or at least the white carbs.
Yeah, it's well, you know what? The first couple days it was, and only because of our behavior. Like, it's so much easier to throw some meat between a piece of bread and take that to work, you know, because it just bang and then you're there. Or in the morning, have a bowl of cereal. But once you get past that, once you change your baseline of your behavior, then it actually becomes very simple. If there's no cereal in the house, there's just eggs. Well, guess what? You're going to be hungry in the morning unless you cook the eggs. And it's important. Like, my wife is totally on board with it, so she's doing it too. And if she wasn't, it would be much harder because the temptation would be there. But I think, and it even stems down to the ayahuasca and stuff. I think that getting to the roots of our bodies, and in ayahuasca would be getting to the roots of our psychology or our consciousness, is very important. Right. You could easily lose connection with it.
Yeah. It's almost like we're, if you were born, I mean, in anywhere from in the last few centuries, it's almost like we're destined to be disconnected from it. Because we're so plugged in and connected, we become disconnected with what's really going on and what's really happening with our feelings. You know, we were talking earlier about some of the medications that are prescribed and some of them that aren't, and just the strange dichotomy between what's legal and what's illegal as far as the war on drugs goes. I think it's time for us to really look at our population, look at the statistics about who is sick physically, who's sick mentally, and realize that what we're doing, whatever we're doing, isn't working. We have the most we're incredibly technologically advanced in science and medicine. We have enormous government funding towards trying to keep people healthy. And the rates of obesity, the rates of cardiovascular disease, the rates of diabetes, the rates of depression are just staggering. And especially when you put a monetary value to them. Something I heard the other day from another PhD that does research on depression was it cost the American economy $200 billion. Just on depression alone, just to try to treat those patients.
That's incredible.
And so what are we doing? What are we really doing? Are we really helping people with this model of, treating symptoms and not getting down to the root? And it's hard to get down to the root these days. You have to do it just with psychotherapy. You can do it with medication to a certain extent, but there's, let's say in the realm of even SSRIs, you might not react to eight or nine out of the 10 medications out there. You might not react, and you might have to go through a few rounds with your doctor before you find the one that works for you. And those few rounds have taken its toll on your body and your psyche already, you know. Sure. So
It's almost like the orca whale that's put in a tank instead of out in the ocean. You hear about how they go crazy, how they behave different. Some of them kill themselves. You ever read that?
No, do they really?
Yeah, dolphins will actually go to the bottom of the pool and drown themselves.
Whoa!
Yeah. Watch. There was a documentary. Oh, what was it called? It wasn't Blackfish. That looked like a good one. I haven't actually watched that one, but there was one. I think it's called The Cove.
Oh yeah.
And it talks about how they get these animals into, the theme parks and stuff, and and the effect that it has on them. And you know, we're animals too. And I could see that if you lose connection of what you're supposed to be doing, you can easily become depressed. There's another issue too that you brought up. There's medicines out there that save lives, and they're really important. But it's kind of in tune with our culture at this point, where we're very what's the word I'm looking for? We want instant gratification. If someone, yeah, if someone comes into your clinic and they say, you know, I'm depressed, give me something to make me feel better. Give me some Xanax to calm me down and give me a pill to make me happy. The first line for anybody should be, the first line of drugs or of treatment should be, you know, try yoga, you know, try meditation, you know, take 20 minutes a day. And that's shown to be effective. That is your first line. And all it is using your body the way it's meant to be used, you know, getting those deep breaths, getting the flexibility, using your toes. How often do people sit there and focus on their toes? You know, they're in shoes all day long, but these are very effective treatments for depression. But no, I don't have time for that. Who's got time for that? I got four kids and two jobs, and I just need a pill to make me better.
Yeah, that's another issue, I guess, is the speed at which we live. And I found, you know, as a future practitioner, I think what I'm going to tell my patients is that as far as exercise goes, you might not have time unless you take something out of your life.
Right.
You know, which can be tough because we tend to fill our lives with the things that make us comfortable and make us feel safe.
Yeah.
And to tell somebody you might have to throw out, you can't watch 8 movies a week. Can you put it down to 3 or 4?
Mm-hmm.
Now we just gained a few hours there for some exercise. Exercise, like you said, it's, if you were to describe the benefits of exercise, like rebalancing your adrenal system, increasing your lung capacity. I mean, well, like I could honestly name a dozen. It would sound like the greatest drug that humanity ever synthesized ever. You know, helps with your mental health, helps with energy, sleep patterns. It would be this unbelievable panacea that it would be the most unbelievable thing we could have ever hoped to make.
Right.
And you know, it's right. It's kind of like, you know, as far as if you want to have a profound spiritual experience, it's kind of right in front of you if you dare to take it. Exercise on the other side of the coin is right there for you if you dare to put in the effort and you dare to put in the discipline and the work. I mean, it's not easy. I didn't want to go to the gym today, but I know if I set these small goals, like my goal for going to the gym would be, I just want to and just see what happens from there.
I just, do you know what? I lost you for that. Whatever you just said, you cut out. Are you there?
Is it stable?
Uh-oh, I'm losing you big time.
Let me try to, maybe. Are you? Okay. How's this? Any different?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
All right. That's really good, actually.
Okay. Where should I start? Because I know you're good with editing. We can pretty much edit it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh, you had said it was like the punchline to what you were saying about going to the gym or what was it? I don't have the ability to just quickly rewind and listen, but regardless, you know, here's the problem. And when I interviewed Dr. Chris Ryan a couple weeks back, he had kind of touched upon this, is that, you know, we're afraid to suffer. You know, doing exercise is a form of stress and suffering. You know, you don't want to go out there and run for 3 miles or, you know, lift weights and sweat and get that, you know, it's painful. It can be painful. And folks, we've really lost touch with the act of suffering. And suffering actually, what good is having, like, you don't understand good if you don't have bad, or pleasure if you don't have pain.
Right, you need that contrast.
You really do, and it's completely lacking. We have a whole generation that is being coddled, and it's not just the generation. I mean, we tend to blame the, you know, the next generation. They're this, they're that, but it's also the people who are raising that generation. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, like, I didn't know.
Because we want, I mean, we want to protect our children.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that our heart's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it, we're constantly going through an evolution, and we thought that that was best, but it's not. Just, you know, going back to exercise again, when you kick the shit out of your body, it responds in this wonderful way.
Right. Know?
All of our fitness models, they go and they go to the grind every day at the gym. They're putting their body through a type of hell, but then it comes out chiseled and looking great. Like it is like your body has been thanking you for doing that. You know?
That's right. And motivation too is another thing. Like, what is your motivation? We have, and it's funny you just bring up fitness model, because I was thinking, your motivation for exercise should be like, let's say you're 50 pounds overweight and you have no cardio and you're out with your two kids running around the lawn and you can't keep up with them and you're sweating and you're wheezing. Your motivation shouldn't be to, you know, to look like a fitness model. Your motivation should be, you know, to move, to use your body, to get it active so you can throw your kids in the air and not worry about throwing up, you know?
Yeah.
And it goes to diet and exercise and lifestyle. I mean, if we can just get in touch with our primal purpose, you know, if we can just acknowledge that, you know, we're not our phones, we're not our houses or our cars, like Tyler Durden would say, you know, you're not your khakis. You're a little pink monkey that needs certain activities, or it's going to fail, or it's going to be that that dolphin in the pool that wants to drown itself because it's like, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah.
And it's so important.
Or that dorsal fin on the orca.
Yeah, that just flops over.
Just flops over.
I had a guy on last year. His name was Ryan Hurst. He's with GMB Fitness. Actually, I just tweeted out, I don't know why, I just had was going through some old videos and I found a little excerpt from him, but I tweeted it out, and he has a fitness program. I think it's at GMB.io might be, but if you Google GMB Fitness, you'll find it. Their whole thing is getting mobility back into your life. You know, there's people that are afraid to do things because they can't bend over or they can't squat down or their shoulders hurt too bad. My shoulders were junk last year. So I found his program, and it was basic movements. It was like doing bear walks or bear crawls and doing, you know, walking like a monkey, or just stretching your arms in ways that, you know, you don't really think about doing, you know, focusing on your fingers when you're stretching. And it saved my shoulders. You know, my shoulders are 100%. They feel like when I was a kid, all from this like untraditional, just basically using your body the way you would as a monkey.
Getting back to your roots.
That's right. That's right. So tell me about, you have some, you're going away again soon, right?
Yeah, I'm going away in a few months. I'm going to the Amazon, to northern Peru, in the triangle that borders Ecuador and Colombia, and there's that northern Peruvian region up there that's famous for the Shabipo people, and it's where a lot of the ayahuasca tourism takes place. So I'm going to go down there with a family member that has quite a bit of experience. We're going to hopefully find some like-minded individuals within our social circles that want to go, and we're going to do it pretty intensively. We're probably going to engage in 6 to 8 ceremonies over 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Graham Hancock had said that during a lot of his initial encounters with ayahuasca, that, you know, he would get to the edge and not quite fall into the abyss. You know, it took several attempts for him to do it. And are you, like, what is your motivation? What is your goal with this trip?
I want to get a little bit more clarity on some pretty big decisions I have to make about my future. You know, the big questions, like, is my path to have a family? What type of a naturopathic doctor do I want to be as far as focus? I'm feeling a little bit discombobulated as far as my direction goes again. Like, now I'm here, great, it's been going good for a couple of years. And you can use this medicine as a tool or as a resource to get you thinking in ways that you can't normally think in, even if you are a regular meditator. It's just completely different. And so I'm really curious to see what other suggestions and solutions that might come my way. They might not. Like, that's the other thing too. They could come, maybe they won't. And the other part of it is that now that I have all of this knowledge and research on the subject, I've been thinking a lot about realms, panspermia, DNA. I want to take that knowledge base and go apply it with that that almost awareness that I have of the whole situation, and just let her rip and see what happens.
Do you know what? It sounds like you're actually describing going to have a talk with your parents. You know what I mean? You need some wisdom placed upon you, and you're summoning whoever it is to guide you. That's pretty fascinating.
That is fascinating. I hadn't thought of it like that before, but it's so true, because like I mentioned earlier, that teacher-student relationship that's so prevalent. And so I guess I'm looking for, yeah, maybe I should really just go have a beer with my dad and just skip the whole Amazon.
It's amazing what you can learn that way, I guess. but yeah, that's going to be really cool. Do you want to come on the show after and discuss?
I would love to. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, we've had some good conversations. I got to have you on more, man. You've got some fascinating ideas there, and I try for it to be the root of this program, you know, trying to kind of lift up the curtain and you know, hear other people's ideas about what it means to be alive, because we're, you know, no one really knows, and the closer you can get to finding out is really just through conversations and I guess defining it for yourself, and the people that I've had on this show have all had some fantastic thoughts, and yours are great. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, you too, man.
What I'll do, how do you want, well, do you know what, on the show notes, I'll just kind of click on there. I'll put your Twitter handle. Is that really, like, if someone wants to get in touch with you and ask you questions?
I'll respond on Twitter. Yeah.
Okay. And it's at @natural_freak, F-R-E-Q, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Man, our last episode, I was pushing nature_freak. That's why I was like, I thought you were gone. I was like, man, his page is gone. What happened?
That's all good.
Yeah. So, all right, man. Enjoy your trip down. When are you going? You said in August?
Yeah, I'm going to go in August.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're going to trip just from sweating down there.
Oh, I know. But yeah, it's my Irish skin. I got to be careful about the sun, and I got to be careful about just how long I'm in the humidity, and yeah, that's going to be a really cool part of it too.
And who knows? Maybe by that time, I will have had a discussion with the aliens and can give you some insight on my end.
Yeah, man, right on. You got great viewpoints either way.
All right, thanks. All right, Riley, @natural_freak, F-R-E-Q. If you guys have any questions for him, and until next time, I'll give you a call in a couple months, and I definitely want to hear what they taught you this time.
Sounds great.
All right, man. Thanks for taking your time.
Thank you. No problem.
All right. Bye-bye.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast and @WWIPodcast on Twitter. Drop us a line @waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. We'll be right back. hope you enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.